specifically the viscera of crabs. And the viscera is where that toxin tends to accumulate in crabs.
Dungeness crab causes paralytic shellfish poisoning in one Haines resident. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That story and more up next. A Haines man is the fifth Alaskan in 2 weeks to be diagnosed with paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP. The middle-aged man reportedly developed symptoms consistent with PSP after eating Dungeness crab on Friday. The shellfish was caught in front of Jenkins Rock near the Chilkat Inlet of the Lynn Canal outside of Haines. Dr. Joe McLaughlin, state epidemiologist with the Department of Health and Social Services, says PSP cases most often come from bivalves, like mussels, clams, oysters, and scallops, and more rarely from eating the internal organs of certain species of crab.
In Alaska, we have also had cases of paralytic shellfish poisoning that have resulted from consumption of crabs, and specifically the viscera of crabs. And the viscera is where that toxin tends to accumulate in crabs.
One or two cases of PSP are reported in Alaska every several years, says McLaughlin, with the majority of the diagnoses in May, June, and July. But in the past 2 weeks alone, that number has spiked.
We're very concerned about it. We've already seen now 5 cases of paralytic shellfish poisoning that have been reported to us, and oftentimes people will become ill with just a little bit of numbness and tingling in their lips or their fingers and may not even go in to seek health care. And so it's very likely that there are a number of cases that occur every year that never go reported. And we're obviously, you know, very, very concerned about paralytic shellfish poisoning because of the potential severity that can occur.
PSP has already caused one death in Alaska this year of a woman in Juneau.
In Alaska, the vast majority of cases that we have seen have occurred first in Kodiak and then second in southeast Alaska. So those are sort of the two big hot spot areas for paralytic shellfish poisoning. But we have seen paralytic shellfish poisoning further north up into Prince William Sound and around the Homer region as well.
Robert Presley is the Department of Environmental Conservation's Seafood Program Manager. He explains that red tide, or rapid increase of algae in water bodies, occur from late May through mid-September. He says although there's no data linking the algae blooms to PSP, DEC believes there's a relationship.
Unlike the lower 48, the scientists have not been able to correlate directly increase of red tide with the increase of PSP in Alaska waters, although we suspect that there are, you know, connections between the two.
Presley says commercially processed seafood is regularly tested and is safe to eat.
Commercially processed crab that are viscerated are generally recognized as safe because the PSP toxin is found in the internal organs of the animal. The only way it's found in the meat is certain levels can migrate from the viscera into the meat post-mortem. That's the reason we require commercially processed crab to be live at the time of delivery.
Dr. McLaughlin recommends people who experience symptoms of paralytic shellfish poisoning, induced vomiting, and seek medical attention. The Haines patient experienced his symptoms after eating crab with several other people, but was the only one who reported symptoms. The patient was medevaced to Juneau and was released Monday morning from Bartlett Regional Hospital. His symptoms included tingling in his lips, numbness in his body, weakness, and poor coordination.
What happens is typically patients who have paralytic shellfish poisoning first notice tingling in their lips and in their fingertips, and then it can progress to sort of a tingling sensation in the shoulders and sort of move down the chest, and then people can actually develop actual paralysis where their limbs become paralyzed, and if it goes centrally into the muscles of respiration, they may become paralyzed and may not be able to breathe, and that's obviously the most severe. The most severe cases are cases in which people are unable to breathe.
PSP symptoms can last as short as a half hour or as long as several days. McLaughlin says cooking the seafood does not reduce the risk of poisoning. The Haines School is building a roof over its outdoor basketball courts after the school board unanimously voted yes to the $250,000 project in a special meeting last week. As Carol Kelly, school board president, explains, the board wanted to expand the use of the outdoor courts. The area which students use for recreation and physical education classes are not currently used in the snowy months.
In the wintertime in Alaska, the weather often prohibits our young people from playing outdoors, and we know that they need to exercise. We have a basketball court at the new school, but it's not useful in the wintertime. Most schools in Alaska have covered play areas where young people can play basketball or other games.
Kelly says the project has been on the wish list since Haynes started planning the new school years ago, but has not been in the budget until now.
We've looked at various roofs in other places and priced them, and they were very, very costly. It was one of the things that was in the original plan for the school that got cut out when we realized that it was going to cost more than we had money for. What had happened was, as we got into construction of the new school, from the time the bond issue had passed until the time we actually began construction, prices had changed. And so things that were originally planned had to be deleted or postponed. Then, as we got at the end and we started finalizing the actual costs of things, we realized we had a little bit of money left.
From there, school staff and the board prioritized the school's unfinished projects and placed the covering behind a couple of other items, like fixing the drainage between the school and the Elks building and repairing leaks in the high school roof. With money now allocated to those first two projects, Kelly says the school began to look at how to complete the outdoor covering.
And it looked like, with a change order, Dawson could complete the roof for about $255,000. We do have that amount left from the construction funds, and so we have allocated funds for them up to a certain amount. I believe we went up to $280,000 for the construction of the roof over the play area.
The structure is 60 by 90 feet, a 412 pitch roof without walls. It'll be over the current outdoor basketball court between the front parking lot and the playground.
And so it will give a substantial area that is not completely protected from the elements, because it's strictly a roof. It doesn't have sides. But it certainly will give some protection and will give an opportunity for students to play outdoors.
The school board discussed and voted on the roof at a special meeting that fell in between two regular meetings. Kelly says in order to get the roof in place by winter, the board had to meet before the end of June. No members of the public attended, but a representative from Dawson Construction was there to explain the construction project.
Les Hostetler from Dawson was there, and he explained exactly what would be constructed, how it would be done, what some of the options are.
The roof cost could range from $255,000 to $280,000, depending on choices that are yet to be made on materials or possible problems that might come up. Brad Maynard is facilities manager for the borough, and he estimates the final number will probably be right in between.
It'll probably come in about, let's say, $275,000. The one thing that we're going to have to do that is not part of this project is we need to replace a section of water line that supplies the school. And I think we're going to do that in-house. The borough will go ahead and replace that water line, and so we should be able to keep those costs fairly low. It's about 250 feet of water line that intersects the construction line of the foundation of the building. But, I mean, everything's looking good. You know, we discussed finish on the metal, color of the roof, some of those details. So I think we're still moving forward with it on schedule.
Construction will begin in the next few months, and builders hope to complete it before snowfall. Once done, the school will paint the poles and maintain the court for use by removing any snow that makes it into the court. Besides school functions, Kelly says the board is hoping to make the covered area available for public use, too.
Yeah, we're thinking it could be made available to the public for activities. And, you know, we were joking about even having a dance out there. There are lots of possibilities because it will be protected from the elements to some degree.
Angoon's tribal government is challenging the state's role in subsistence management. The Southeast Alaska Village's action comes as four of its residents prepare to go on trial for allegedly overfishing their subsistence permits. The Angoon Community Association sent a letter this month to Sitka's regional office of the State Department of Fish and Game. It says the state should defer to tribes. Elder Edward Gamble, speaking at a recent tribal summit, objected to requirements that village residents obtain state permits.
Subsistence is not a fishery for the state to manage, but an inherent, customary, and traditional right of indigenous people of Southeast Alaska.
The tribal government also opposes state management on Admiralty Island, where Angoon is located, because it's a national monument under federal jurisdiction. Campbell says the community association also objects to the permit application process.
They make you sign a piece of paper that has all the conditions on there. And looking at that, to me and to the council, that's entrapment. They take you to court for signing the piece of paper on something that is your inherent right.
The letter was sent to Bill Davidson in Fish and Game's Sitka office in response to a press release about subsistence permits. Davidson says he and other officials could not comment because of an upcoming court case. But the state has defended its management practices in the past, saying it's required by state law. State Senator Albert Kukesh and three other Angoon residents go on trial July 8th. They're charged with catching more sockeye salmon in a beach seine last summer than their subsistence permits allowed. Fish and Game says it issued subsistence and personal use permits to about 3,500 Southeast households last year. Those people caught about 47,000 salmon, with some going to elders and others who could not fish for themselves. Reporting for KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.